pleasure to share with you the magnificent scriptures that the Lord has left us through the mouth and the pen of Moses in the book of Deuteronomy. Last week we dealt with the double invitation to joy and satisfaction in the presence of the Lord. Verses 5 through 12, actually 5 through 14, are wonderful declaration of invitation to come and worship in the presence of God. We didn't have the recorder working last week, and so Mar asked if I would quickly review some of that for the sake of continuity. So I'm just going to whip through verses 4 through 15 just to bring us up to speed for what we get when we come to verse 15. The first invitation to worship follows verse 4. You shall not act like this toward the Lord your God. Two or three weeks ago, we mentioned that this is a call to worship differently from the way the world does. God's people are not to take their cues on worship from the world. Well, then, where do we go? In verses 5 through 7, he has the first invitation. You are invited to make your pilgrimages to the place that the Lord will choose, which he will choose from among all your tribes. It will be stamped with the Lord's name, authorizing this as the or declaring this, stamping this as the authorized place of worship. And there the Lord promises to meet with his people. I mentioned that this place is intentionally chosen and designed so that God may have fellowship with his people. It's not only for the benefit of the people, but the Lord delights and he creates all kinds of, dare we say, excuses to get the people into his presence because he delights in their fellowship. This will be the destination for their pilgrimages. Well, I didn't show you this picture last week or the week before, but this is a text, an Amarna letter tablet. This was correspondence between the kinglets of Palestine as the Israelites were settling down. There are no references to the Israelites in all of these tablets, but you can see they're from the 14th century, that is from the 1300s B.C. This is a letter from Abdi Chepa, king of Jerusalem. He's never mentioned in the Bible. When the Israelites under the Judahite leadership in Judges chapter 1 attack Jerusalem, they mention a king, but not this guy. But anyhow, Abdi Chepa writes in this letter, he's a puppet ruler of Jerusalem, he writes to Pharaoh, and in this note, as a part of his argument for Pharaoh's support, he says, as the king has placed his name in Jerusalem forever, he cannot abandon it. Well, Jerusalem becomes the place where the Lord places his name. And this is the place of worship that God picks. And later on, it's very interesting, when you get to 586, when the Babylonians are threatening to wipe out the remnant state of Judah and attack Jerusalem, one of the arguments that the Jewish people in Judah make that God cannot and will not abandon them in the hour of need is that he has chosen this place as his name, as the place for his name to dwell. And therefore, he has to, he is obligated to defend it for his own sake. It's stamped with his name. Well, here you see that kind of idea reflected in an early tablet. What will the Israelites do at the place that the Lord stamps with his name? They will present their gifts to the Lord. They will banquet in his presence. And I mentioned that when God receives these offerings, he invites the people to sit down and then he turns around and he feeds them. This is the place of fellowship, celebrating peace. and celebrating the Lord's blessing on their work. And it's simply an expression of joy and goodwill and delight in this covenant relationship. That was the first invitation, verses 5 to 7. The second invitation begins in verse 8. You shall not do at all what you are doing here today, every man doing what's right in his own eyes. And we applied that to worship. The acceptable worship is not defined by the worshiper. In verse 4, the point was acceptable worship is not defined by the world. In verse 8, acceptable worship is not defined by the worshiper. Only the one who is the object of worship declares what is acceptable to him. And so that was the point there. Then in verses 9 through 12, we had a reiteration of much of what he had said earlier. You're invited to come to the place that the Lord will choose. There you may bring all your offerings. And there, verse 12, you rejoice before the Lord your God. You and your sons and daughters, your male and female servants, and the Levites within your gates, since he has no portion with you. And then there is the reference to the actions, celebration, eating in his presence, rejoicing, the disposition of joy and gladness, and the participants, everyone in the family. Well, all of that has to do with the invitation to joy and satisfaction in the home of the Lord. This changes our attitude, at least when I started wrestling with this, it changed my attitude towards Israelite worship. I always felt so sorry for them for all the things they had to do and the laws they had to keep and how paranoid you would be if lest you not keep them quite rightly. But it's not that way at all. The focus in the book of Deuteronomy, and we'll have this, I mentioned the other day, the references to the place the Lord will choose for his name 21 times in the book, and in every case, it's an invitation to come and celebrate. It's not so much about watching out for the boundaries and this kind of paranoia that we tend to associate with the law. But it is the opposite. It is an invitation to come and delight in his presence. And that's how we need to interpret this. Were there any questions that we need to answer about last week yet before we get into our intriguing text today? All right, let's go then to verses 15 through 27. I suppose we should read this text, shouldn't we? However, notice in verses 13 to 14, he had warned, be careful that you do not offer your burnt offerings in any cultic place that you see. So by that he means the offerings that are dedicated to the Lord, particularly, you've got to take to the Lord's house, not anywhere you want, but in the place where the Lord chooses in one of your tribes, there you may offer your burnt offerings, and there you shall do all that I command. But, you may slaughter. My translation here has slaughter, and I noticed that in my commentary, I mentioned that this is how I interpret this. The word usually means sacrifice. There are three or four places where it might mean slaughter. We'll come to that in a moment. But I think it really, we ought to translate it sacrifice here. However, you may sacrifice and eat meat within any of your gates, whatever you desire, according to the blessing of the Lord your God, which he has given you. The unclean and the clean may eat of it as of the gazelle and the deer. Only you shall not eat the blood. You are to pour it out on the ground like water. You're not allowed to eat within your gates the tithe of your grain and the new wine and oil, or the firstborn of your herd or flock, or any of the votive offerings which you vow, or your freewill offerings, or the contribution of your hand, but you shall eat them before the Lord your God in the place that the Lord your God will choose, you and your son and daughter, your male and female servants, the Levite who is within your gates, and you shall rejoice, celebrate before the Lord your God in all your undertakings. Be careful, do not forsake the Levite as long as you live in the land. when the Lord your God extends your border as he has promised you, and you say, you know, I would like to eat meat. Because you would like to eat meat. Then you may eat meat. Go ahead, whatever you desire. If the place which the Lord your God chooses to put his name is too far from you, then go ahead, sacrifice of your herd and your flock which the Lord has given you, as I have commanded you. You go ahead, eat within your gates whatever you desire. Just as the gazelle or deer is eaten, so you may eat it. The unclean and the clean alike may eat of it. Only be sure not to eat the blood, for the blood is the life. You shall not eat the life with the flesh. You shall not eat it. You shall pour it out on the ground like water. You shall not eat it so that it may be well with you and your sons after you, for you will be doing what is right in the eyes of the Lord. Only your holy things which you may have and your votive offerings you shall take and go to the place that the Lord chooses, and you shall offer your burnt offerings, the flesh and the blood, on the altar of the Lord your God, and the blood of your sacrifices shall be poured out on the altar of the Lord your God, and you shall eat flesh. Or you may eat the flesh. Well, I sent you the notes, and in the notes I have a summary of the structure of this passage. And I mentioned the other day that in the previous passage, we had two invitations to come to worship, like two panels of a wooden writing board. And so I have superimposed the present texts there. So we have two panels now, two invitations to come to the presence of the Lord. Now, two invitations to go ahead and eat at home. Moses has a habit of doing this, and in this case, he's got two versions of what is largely a duplicate account, duplicate instructions. You can see the left column is the first presentation, and the right column is the second one. I have put it up on white now just so it's a little bit easier. In general, what's on the left is repeated on the right, but there are some duplications. In the first part of this, notice I have a dotted line there. In the first part of it, you have the invitation to eat meat where in your gates. Then underneath the dotted line, you have the caution, but if you're going to do that, here are some riders on that provision. And then the second part, under the solid line, you have discussion about eating at the central sanctuary, which he's already talked about. This is largely unpacking further what we had in verses 13 and 14. You may eat in your homes, but don't neglect eating in the presence of the Lord at the central sanctuary as well. So, critical scholars, of course, they tend to look upon duplications like this as later editing and all the rest of it. But I prefer to look at this as coming from the lips, or at this point, the pen of a preacher. And preachers often say, they duplicate what they have been saying for rhetorical emphasis so that the people actually get it. And I think that actually that's what is going on here. While he has been talking about worshiping and eating in the presence of the Lord at the central sanctuary, I'm sure it was crossing the people's minds. You mean we may eat meat only three times a year? At Passover, at the Festival of Weeks, and the Festival of Booths? What if we want to eat meat the rest of the year? Now, of course, at the central sanctuary, if so long as Israel is on the march as a community through the desert, and even at the present time, the camp is at the central sanctuary. You know, so any meal they have now, by definition, is in the presence of the Lord, because the tabernacle is right in the middle of the camp. But that will change once we cross the Jordan And once we conquer the land and we scatter to our tribal territories, then some of us are going to be far from the land. And so he gives us now, he answers the question, I think he anticipates the question, what about when we are all settled in our lands and we would like to eat meat? Well, we look first of all then at the in my discussion of this subject, I'm going to break it up as you see it in on the backside. I'm going to treat these top two panels together, and then I'll treat these bottom two panels together. So we'll talk first of all about eating in your gates, and then we'll just make a few passing comments summarizing eating at the central sanctuary. Most of our conversation will be on eating in your gates, which is the new item on the agenda. But before that, let's back up a little bit and talk now about what about this word for sacrifices. I already alluded to it. You have it in verse 15. However you may slaughter and eat meat. The assumption of my translator here and the assumption of the NIV translation and most translations is that at this point the word does not have reference to sacred slaughter. And I notice that even in my commentary, the heading is something like the invitation to profane slaughter. I've changed my mind about that. I don't think it's profane. And there are a couple of reasons for that. And I give you a bit of it here. The use of the verb zavach, which in Deuteronomy and elsewhere generally, in fact, in Deuteronomy, always, apart from these texts, refers to sacral slaughter, that is sacred, not profane. It seems intentionally chosen to suggest that all consumption of meat involves a sacrifice of sorts. And it's a sacred act. And that's one of the reasons why when you butcher this creature, you are to let the blood flow to the ground. When you sacrifice at the central sanctuary, what do you do with the blood? Pour it on the altar. You scatter it on the altar. In this case, you let it go out on the ground. We'll talk about that some more at the end. There are some rare exceptions where zavach looks like a synonym of tavach and shachat, two words for that mean simply butcher. This is what they do at the meatpacking plant. They certainly don't treat this as sacred. Here's one. Now, the woman, with the witch of Endor, had a fattened calf in the house, and she quickly killed it. She took flour and kneaded it and baked unleavened bread, and she put it before Saul and his servants. Well, the verb in question is, she quickly killed it. Is this pointer not working? She killed it. That's how this translation simply renders it. There's no hint here of sacrifice. Now, on the other hand, this is the witch at Endor. She may think she is doing something sacred. And so I'm not so sure that this is simply profane slaughter. Here's another one. Now, Jehoshaphat had great riches and honor. And he made a marriage alliance with Ahab. After some years, he went down to Ahab in Samaria, and Ahab killed an abundance of sheep and oxen for him, butchered and for the people who were with him, and induced him to go up against Ramoth-Gilead. Again, you need to ask, is this really profane slaughter? Or is this a kind of sacrificial act before we go out to battle? That is a valid question. But here's one of the texts that is often given as proof that this word can mean profane slaughter. Ezekiel 34:2. This one may be the closest. Shepherds of Israel who have been feeding yourselves, should not the shepherds feed the sheep? You eat the fat, you clothe yourselves with the wool, you slaughter the fat ones, but you do not feed the sheep. Here I think it is simply slaughter. You're butchering them for yourselves. But the use of the word for butcher is actually very rare. And in this case, I think there is a hint that every slaughter that we perform is in fact a sacrifice. And in fact, you can look at it from the perspective of the animal. Now, some people say that this is animal abuse. The other side of that could be that just as the highest service we can render to the Lord is to give our bodies as living sacrifices to God, so the highest service an animal can perform is to give its body as a sacrifice for the image of God. So there's a theological grounding on that as well. Well, what can we say on slaughter / sacrifice at home? Well, why even do we need these instructions from Pastor Moses? What's the issue? Well, and I think there are two issues. There is, first of all, a personal desire. Don't you love it the way he puts it here? However, you may slaughter eat with any of your, whatever you desire. Verse 20. When the Lord extends your border as he has promised you, and you say, I will eat meat because you desire to eat meat, then you may eat meat, whatever you desire. And then finally, 21 at the end, you may eat within your gates, whatever you desire. I'm so glad this is in the scripture. Why? Not just so I can have steak. I mean, there's something more. We'll talk about the vegetarian business at the end. But there's something more here. You say, I'd like to eat meat. What's Moses' response? It's okay. I mean, we have this notion, I think I've intimated this before, some of you weren't here probably at the time, we have this notion that the Old Testament is always negative. It's always pouring cold water on everything. No, it's not. It's a wonderful yes. You'll have exactly the same kind of thing happening in chapter 17. I mentioned this in another context. Verse 14, when you enter the land which the Lord your God gives you, and you possess it, and you live in it, and you say, I would like to set a king over me like all the nations who are around me. What does Moses say? Don't you dare. No, go ahead. You may surely set a king over you whom the Lord chooses. Only, again there, he will put some riders on it. He shall be somebody from your own countrymen, whom the Lord chooses. You may not put a foreigner, but as for a king, have it. It's okay. There's nothing fundamentally wrong with kingship. And so you have it here. And actually, I suppose we should remind ourselves that the Israelites have been eating meat for a long time. I mean, at the Passover, remember? In Egypt, they were in the foreign land. They weren't even at the central sanctuary. They didn't have a central sanctuary. And in every home, they were to sacrifice the Passover. That was a sacred meal. And then eat it together. And so the first, the need for these instructions is simply, what's in your heart? God has given us an appetite. Go ahead. satisfy it. And of course, the expression "bekol awath nafshika," this can be interpreted in lots of different ways. Any animal that you want, anywhere that you want, any how that you want. It's very, very vague. And it's, I think, deliberately open at this point. Anywhere, anyhow, and in the translation on the other side, I have the three possibilities. Whenever, wherever, whatever you desire. As they say in Minnesota, whatever. Go ahead. Enjoy. Yes, ma'am. We'll come to that in a moment when we talk about the riders on this thing. This is not, it is not actually eat anything you want anywhere. He will put restrictions on this. We'll talk about that in a moment. Yes, sir. No, they have been eating meat. But from Moses' instructions to this point in this chapter, chapter 12, the invitation to joy and satisfaction at the place the Lord chooses, the point he has been making is there at the central sanctuary, you may eat meat in the presence of God, which raises the question, well, what about when we're not in the presence of God? And I think Moses is anticipating that question. And very quickly he says, oh, by the way, that's not the only place that eating meat is allowed. And so I think that's why he's doing this. He's anticipating the question. Oh, I think they were. Yeah, I think they were. In fact, I mean, right from the beginning, already Genesis 9, God authorizes to Noah, you may eat the flesh so long as you pour out the blood. In fact, I think they were eating blood before, eating meat before that already. Abel is off bringing a sacrifice as a lamb to the Lord. Why do people raise sheep? Among the reasons for raising sheep is wool, milk, meat. So, and when Noah enters into the ark, the Lord says, take seven clean and seven unclean. Well, how in the world does Noah know what clean and unclean are? The text says nothing like, oh, and Noah said to God, what do you mean clean? Unclean. I think this is already common knowledge at this point. So I think they've been eating meat all along, but in the present context, Moses has been focusing on the central sanctuary, the central sanctuary, the central sanctuary. Ah, but I'd like to eat meat more than three times a year. Go ahead, have it. Of course, there's the quail in the desert. Yes, you know, there's been no restriction. I mean, in principle, on eating meat, no taboo on it. The other need for these instruction is the distance from the central sanctuary. Already mentioned, and he mentions that, but I noted that so long as they're around the tabernacle as a camp, they're at the central sanctuary. So there's no problem. Ah, but when you conquer the land and all of you are headed up to your tribal territories from the north to the south and way up here, you say, you know, on the menu today is steak. But I can't go down to Jerusalem. It takes a couple of days to take the whole clan down there. I'd like to eat it right here. And so throughout this, you heard the expression, in your gates, in your gates, in your gates. What does that mean? I mentioned this earlier. It does not mean in the doorways or the gateways to your town. That's a euphemism, in the towns where you live. All the way through, we talk about the Levites who lives in your gates. Levites don't live in the gates. The aliens who live in the gates. No, they don't live in the gates. No, it's a way of saying in your fortified towns, and villages. So this is what we've got here. Here's another schematic way of looking at it. Notice in this, and this is in particular with reference, I think, to Levitical towns, how the Levitical cities were supposed to work. But notice Israelites' geographic system. We talked about something like this a little bit last week when we talked about, you know, the Roman Catholics are doing some things that we've thrown out, baby with the bathwater. And this cathedral system looks like it. I mean, you've got the cathedral in Jerusalem as the center sanctuary over here. But then you've got 48 towns designated as Levitical cities all around. But there are lots more towns than 48. My theory is that these towns are the bases of operation out there among the tribes, all up and down the land. You see, we have to do pastoral ministry all year round. You cannot maintain the faith of a people simply by requiring everybody to come to the capital city three times a year. Life happens. People need pastoral help. And there are lots of regulations. For instance, if you live in a house that develops leprosy. Well, what's leprosy in a house? It's mold. And in that context, you are to treat a house with leprosy, with mold, like you treat a human being with leprosy. And in this case, it is to go through elaborate purification process, and then in the end, the priest has to come and give his stamp of approval on the health of this house. Well, that priest can't be coming from Jerusalem. It's not the high priest. He can't be everywhere. And besides, babies are born, people marry, people die. People have great moments in their lives and they have down moments in their lives. They need pastoral help. And I think that's the function of the Levitical cities and the Levitical priests. They're stationed out there as the pastors to the people. And here, if you want to eat meat in your gates, go ahead, eat meat, and I think it's probably up to the Levitical priest to be sure that the people remember that blood is sacred and you only eat, you know. One of their jobs is to help the people remember the boundaries between clean and unclean. So all the way through, this, I think, is the way in which the faith of Israel should have been preserved. So that when the book of Judges in chapter 2 verse 10 says, there arose a generation that knew not the Lord nor the things that the Lord had done for Israel, it's not just because parents hadn't taught their children. It's that this system wasn't working. The priests weren't doing their jobs and the Levites had fallen down on the job. But if you live in one of these outlying towns, that's not even a Levitical city, and you say, oh, you know, I'd like to eat meat in my house. And in a sense, every household unit was a pastoral unit, with the head of the household being the pastor of the clan, of the clan, and the priest in the Levitical priests in the community would be there to be sure that it's all working. Well, here, if you're living so far away, you're living in one of these outlying towns, you can't go to Jerusalem every time you want to have steak. Go ahead, have it at home. No problem. And it's really, in my mind, mind you, by now I'm viewing everything with such rosy-tinted lenses, in my mind, it is a wonderful provision. Notice Moses' response. I have summarized the four aspects of his response. First, they may eat meat in proportion to the Lord's blessing. However, you may slaughter and eat meat within your gates, verse 15, whatever you desire, according to the blessing of the Lord your God that he has given you. Not a problem. If you have a flock and they are producing, well, go ahead. The Lord has given you meat in accordance with the Lord. Notice, though, how pastoral he is and how eager he is to remind people this is a theological issue. It is what God has given you. We talked about this in chapter 8. When you have become prosperous and your flocks increase and you've got land and barns and everything, be careful lest you say, see what I have accomplished with my hands. For you shall remember that it was the Lord who gave you the ability to accomplish anything to begin with. And here's another reminder. Hey, if you're sacrificing a lamb or a calf or whatever else, remember, this is a gift from God. It is not your own accomplishment. It is the blessing of God. First. Second, they may eat meat in their gates to their heart's content. Verse 21 again, whatever you desire, go ahead. We've already talked about this. Three, both the clean and the unclean may eat of it. Verse 15. We're not talking here about clean and unclean food. We're talking about clean and unclean people. Well, under what circumstances would we be clean or unclean? Well, the unclean and the clean may eat of it. Verse 15, and what's the other verse? 22, just as a gazelle or the deer is eaten, so you will eat it. The clean and the unclean may eat it. At this point, the unclean may in fact refer to the alien who is in your midst. The non-Israelite. They're invited to participate. But I actually don't think that's the primary reference. I think we have a reference here to people who, through amoral, not immoral, but through amoral acts, have been rendered unclean. And they haven't had an opportunity to go to the sanctuary, or I don't know if they had village shrines where they did this, or they haven't had the priest come over and bless them and, you know, purify them. And this happens in many different ways. For instance, if your father dies and you are forced to take care of your deceased father, guess what happens? You're unclean. Or if you are a woman and the days of your monthly event, you're unclean. Or after childbirth, you're unclean. Those are not immoral issues. They're natural issues. There's no guilt associated with them. And so the Lord is saying, even when you're in those conditions and you haven't reached the eighth day of purification or whatever else, go ahead, eat meat. You don't have to be ceremonially pure to eat these in your gates. Again, notice how he's opening the door wide open. Moses wants you to enjoy life. And so you have it here. They may eat both the clean and the unclean may eat of it. This is to be a family meal. And chances are in the extended family, which consists probably of the household would consist of three or four generations, there's probably always somebody in this group that's in a state of uncleanness for one reason or another. And what he's saying here, I'm not intending to cramp your style. Go ahead. And don't exclude those who, for the moment, are ceremonially unclean. They're all welcome at this table. Again, notice the magnanimity of this. A fourth thing, they may eat the meat of domestic animals like they do wild game, 15, verses 15 and 22. Again, here he refers to you may eat of your animals like you eat of the gazelle and the deer. And verse 22, just as a gazelle or deer is eating. Well, when you see that in here, you assume that, it's a given we can eat wild game. That's the given. And what he's saying now is, inasmuch as you can eat wild game, go ahead, you can also eat that which your hand has raised. Which raises the question, why would he even have to add that? Could it have to do with the fact that in that world, every sheep, every calf would be a member of the household? It's one thing to eat wild game. You have no bond with them. It's another thing to eat that little lamb that was born in your house. And you probably even gave a name to it. And when you butcher that thing, it hurts. I mean, I grew up on a farm like that. My father wasn't much of a farmer, but... And all our cattle had names. It always stressed my father. The day we had, we always butchered every fall, and my uncle would come over. It'd be a great day because he was such a jolly uncle, my favorite uncle, my mother's youngest brother. They would come over, and they would have a butchering bee. But my father would always stress out over that because that animal that he was butchering. I mean, when you live with them that close, I mean, these days with our factory farms, animals have no personality. They're just numbers. You see the ear tags on the cows and whatever. They're just a number. There is no sense of identification or pain or grief. I'm not just trying to be sentimental here. But on the other hand, this is a member of the household. And there would be times, I'm sure, when my father remembered that when that calf was small, the boys made a pet out of it. And there are fond memories with that critter. And now we have to butcher it. And I think that's why the default here is the wild game. I mean, you're not bonded with those. But what about that which your hand has touched regularly? Go ahead, have it. But notice you don't eat it callously. So, anyhow, they may eat the meat of domestic animals like they do the wild game. Well, I've got a couple of pictures. He's got a gazelle. He mentions the gazelle. This is what we're talking about. Wouldn't that make a nice meal? I mean, how can you shoot those things? Even in the wild. And here is the fallow deer. Notice, I mean, when we come to chapter 14, he'll give us the definition of clean and unclean. So that'll take us another week or two. Yes, these animals would be at En-Gedi. Yes, up the. I unfortunately don't have them in my backyard. I would like them there. We do have other kinds of critters, but not these. But these are okay. I mean, they meet the criteria specified in Leviticus 11 and later in chapter 14 of Deuteronomy. They chew the cud and they have split hooves. We'll talk about what's the point of that. But in any case, like these wild animals, I mentioned earlier Mount Gerizim and Ebal, where they are supposed to go at the end of chapter 11, the first thing when you cross the Jordan, head for Gerizim and Ebal, and there you are to, write the words of this Torah on the pillars and have sacrifices there. Archaeologists have dug up a massive altar on Mount Ebal. And of course the question is that this altar they're talking about. But in this context, what's fascinating to me is the high proportion of fallow deer bone remnants that they found there. Which reminds us that at that time in Israel's history, I mean, as they are settling down, they are to a large extent dependent on wild game. And so, but they were used there. Were they a part of the sacrifice? Were they a part of sacrifices at home, meals at home? We're not quite sure. In any case, go ahead and eat these poor critters. But then there's the caution, verses 16 and 23. Notice he does everything in duplicate here. Verse 16, only you shall not eat the blood. You are to pour it out on the ground like water. And then in verse 23, only be sure not to eat the blood. And now he gives a theological reason. For the blood is the life, and you shall not eat the life with the flesh. You're to drain the blood. Now, we need to make a couple of comments. The blood is the life. Do I have some additional references? Well, we'll come back to them. But I think, to some extent, the identification of life and blood is phenomenologically based. I mean, what is it about blood that is particularly sacred? Well, the fact is that when an animal dies, as the blood drains, you notice the life goes. And so with the loss of blood, there is the loss of life. They didn't know what we know about the circulation system. The lots of other fundamental ingredients to life that we know about that they didn't. But in this case, I think it's phenomenological. And the other thing about this, and no biblical text mentions it, there's another thing about draining the blood. I think that is intentional to humanize the slaughter. You see, it's very easy to kill an animal with a projectile, with an arrow. I shouldn't say it. The skill is not so easy, but we readily do that. You kill an animal by throwing a rock at it, or an arrow, or throwing a spear, or whatever. But what about the life of that animal? I mean, we're talking wild animals now. Chances are the domestic animals didn't have to do that with it from a distance. But these, you have to kill from a distance. But even if you eat these, you've got to drain the blood. Well, what does that force you to do? It forces you to go up to the animal and to touch the animal and to look the animal in the eye. And even as you're slitting the jugular, you are touching this thing. And I think it's a way of humanizing the whole business. Life is sacred, not just human life. In fact, the definition of a human being as a nefesh chaya, a living being, that very same expression is used of animals in Genesis 1. Animals are nefesh chayot, living beings, only with a plural there. And I think that's probably a part of this as well. Let's go to Leviticus chapter, what have we got, 7. Leviticus chapter 7. And of course, as Moses is instructing the people this way, Moses assumes the people know the fuller account. In Leviticus chapter 7, where do we pick it up? It starts out with, here's the law of the guilt offering, whatever. What do you do with the blood? You splatter it on the altar. Verse 11 and following. Now, let's see. Where is this? I have 17 in the notes. But what is left over? So if any, he who offers it will not be accepted. No, that's not. It's chapter 17. That's the problem. It's on the wrong side of the page in my Bible. That's the first hint that something is missing or amiss. Chapter 17, yes. Let's pick it up at, we can pick it up before 17. No. Verse 10, and any man from the house of Israel or from the aliens who sojourn with, who eats any blood, I will set my face. I mean, here, even the alien who eats blood is under the taboo of the Lord. I will set my face against them, will cut them off, for the life of the flesh is in the blood. This is not just a distinctly Israelite identity marker. It also applies to the end. I have given it to you for the life is of the flesh is in the blood. I have given it to you on the altar to make atonement for your life. It is the blood by reason of the life that makes atonement. Therefore, I said to the sons, no person among you may eat blood, nor may any alien who sojourns among you. So when any man from the sons of Israel, from the aliens sojourn among them, catches a beast or a bird which may be eaten, he shall pour its blood and cover it with earth. For as for the life of all flesh, its blood is identified with the life. Therefore I said to the sons of Israel, you're not to eat the blood of any flesh, for the life of all flesh is the blood. Whoever eats it shall be cut off. Whenever any person eats an animal which dies or is torn by beasts, whether he is native or alien, he shall wash his clothes and bathe in water. Here's that uncleanness. And remain unclean until evening, and then he becomes clean. But if one doesn't wash them or bathe them, then he shall bear their guilt. We'll come back next week and talk about the significance of this and whether or not these kinds of taboos have any relevance for us for today. But so far, the instructions on sacrifice at home. Next week when we come back, actually, next week is always the next week when we're assigned to meet, which is a fortnight from now. We'll talk very quickly about the nature of sacrificial meals, sacred meals, and participants in these, most of which we've already talked about. And then we'll talk about the significance of this whole text for us. What do we as Christians do with this passage? But for the moment, I think we have time for one or two questions. I've been rattling on. I think it means as a liquid. I don't think. Well, yes. The question is, why pour it out like water? Yeah, I don't think it means casual. I think it means simply as a liquid. Let it flow out. Let it flow like water, which probably is a way of saying, don't wait until it's, you know, coagulated, and then it won't flow anymore, while the carcass is still fresh. I think that's what. Yes. I think that's a good question. Did you hear that? Why bury it? Why cover it with dirt? I think it is to prevent a bloody environment where there's a cheapening of life all around. The blood and guts and gore that we are entertained by in our day, which reminds us again how far removed we are. Not only is human life not sacred anymore, but not even animal life of any sort. You're deemed silly if you start talking like this. But I think it's deliberate so that the blood is reserved for God. Only He sees it. We don't see it. And so we don't trample on it. We don't whatever else. One more. Yeah. That's the practical thing, but I think there's something more here than simply the practical to, you know, keep your feet clean or your sandals clean. Yeah. Well, it does make you unclean. Yes. That count, yes. I think. All right. Fascinating text. It's amazing what you find in the book of Deuteronomy. And he touches on almost every conceivable aspect of life. And notice again the tone of invitation. I think that's what we need to see. Moses is a yes guy. He's not a no guy. And Moses speaks according to the command of God, which means God is a yes God. When we're in relation to Him, operate by the impulse of your heart. For if you're in relation to Him, your heart's impulse will be right. Go ahead. But don't become casual or cold or pagan in the way we do this. Let's pray. Gracious Heavenly Father, we thank You for Your mercy, Your grace, for Your delight in fellowship with us, and for Your magnanimous provision for fellowship with You. We thank You for everything You have made, for every creature You have made. And we thank You for those creatures that give their lives for us. May we never desecrate Your name by treating even that basic human activity as casual or cold, but help us in everything to honor Your name and to honor and respect life in all its dimensions. We ask this through Jesus Christ, our Lord. Amen.